I think it is important that we be able to have real and open debates about religion. I'm a Christian. I don't have any problem with someone having the freedom to forcefully disagree with the claims of Christianity, even to argue that the social implications of Christianity have been negative. If that's someone's view, they're welcome to express that. So I think we need to just be clear about what we're talking about, that discrimination is always and everywhere unacceptable, but it's also important to be able to have a substantive discussion and debate about religious ideas.
On the feature today, Alberta MP Garnet Jenness with some perspectives on criticism of religious speech. In the news, apportion BC to defund independent schools, a look back at ARPA's legal arguments in the Ontario FIPPA case, and a couple of issues of interest to ARPA supporters are slowly moving forward in Ottawa.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
There's a provincial election coming up in BC in a few months, and in advance of that, the BC Teachers Federation is making a push to put the funding of Christian and independent schools on the radar for voters. The Federation issued a call last week for the government to phase out all funding for those independent schools over the next 4 years. ARPA education consultant Harry Mose.
The BCTF has always had a position that they do not believe in choice of education. They believe that there should only be one education system around the province. And so they've never approved of funding for independent schools. It's consistent with their overriding policy. But of course, it has to be remembered that the BCTF is a union. It is a federation of teachers. It is not a political party.
So will this proposal actually gain any traction among BC's political parties?
You never know what could happen tomorrow. But if we do take a look at the past, I think the track record has been that all political parties, be that the NDP, the Liberals, and even the Green Party, have gone on record that they will support school choice. In all the previous elections, all the parties have submitted to the Federation of Independent Schools in writing that they would continue to support independent schools and that they would not change or alter the present funding formula. And it is my anticipation that as we go into the spring election in May, that once again the Federation of Independent Schools will have that in writing from all parties concerned.
In other news, we're still awaiting a ruling from an Ontario judge on ARPA's legal challenge of the province's Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. Specifically, a provision in that act which allows the government to withhold all statistics related to abortions done in the province. ARPA lawyer John Sikkema argued the case late last month, and he admits the argument he made is something that hasn't explicitly been heard before.
We know the government can't censor people's expression unless it has a very good reason to. Now, the government isn't censoring us. The government isn't shutting down ARPA or We Need a Law's website. The government is actually censoring data, censoring information that websites like ours and other activists, even just interested people, want. And so by censoring information, they're preventing people from saying things about what the government's doing. And so it's kind of an indirect form of censoring people like us. And so it's just kind of another step removed. The courts have recognized that there's some connection there, but in order for that to amount to something that's unconstitutional, it needs to be fairly severe. And I think this is because of how broad the censorship of abortion statistics is. It's just kind of across the board.
No firm word on when a ruling could be issued in the case. A couple of issues of interest to ARPA supporters continuing to move forward in Ottawa. Sarnia Lambton MP Marilyn Gladue's private member's bill 277, asking Parliament to establish a national palliative care strategy, has passed second reading in the House. Oshawa MP Colin Carey spoke in favour.
This bill ensures that all Canadians have a real choice in regards to their end-of-life plans, something that is extremely important now that physician-assisted dying is legal. The Supreme Court itself stated that a request for physician-assisted death cannot be truly voluntary if the option of proper palliative care is not available to alleviate a person's suffering. Canadians expect and deserve a choice between quality palliative care and assisted death. This government has already committed to one of those, and it is now time for them to commit to the importance of high-quality palliative care in Canada.
The bill is now off for committee study. Another motion we've been following is Arnold Viersen's Motion 47. That's the one that has the Health Committee studying the effects of violent online porn, particularly on young people. Viersen had a chance to speak to his motion before the Health Committee last week.
It's been over 30 years since the House of Commons has taken on a study of the issue of sexually explicit material. And 30 years ago, the internet never even existed. A lot of people, when they think of pornography today, they think of Playboy. But the fact is, Online adult content has shifted due to the explosion of the internet to a much more explicit form of material, the vast majority featuring violence and degradation. I want to share a few key statistics about sexually explicit material and the industry behind it. In Canada, the average first age of exposure to sexually explicit material for boys is 12 years old. Sexually explicit websites get more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. 35% of all internet downloads are sexually explicit, and globally, sexually explicit material represents a $97 billion industry. Sexually explicit material has become the primary source of information about sex and a significant factor influencing sexual behaviors for children and adolescents. Let that sink in for a minute. A $97 billion industry that makes up 35% of all of the internet downloads is easily accessible by the click of a button and primarily features violence and degradation of women is the primary sexual educator of our youth starting from the age of 12.
Interestingly, he says the discussion in Ottawa has garnered attention from around the world.
I don't mean to add any more pressure to this committee, but other countries are looking at what Canada is going to do, and they see us as cutting edge on this issue.
And one thing more, the federal government moving ahead with an election pledge to reinstate the so-called Court Challenges Program. This is the one that funds groups that want to launch constitutional challenges of various laws, groups that might not otherwise have the money to do so. It was this program that actually resulted in the Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage, among other things. Now the program is being expanded to include more charter arguments, including religion and freedom of expression, democratic participation, and the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, as well as the application of the Official Languages Act.
Justice Minister Jody Wilson-Raybould.
This new version of the program with its expanded scope will clarify and help safeguard an even broader range of constitutional and quasi-constitutional rights and freedoms.
We'll be back with more after this from Reference Grassroots Manager Colin Postma.
Join me on February 27th or 28th in the Fraser Valley, British Columbia, or March 1st or March 2nd in Alberta for a series of workshops focusing on generating new ideas for action, on brainstorming new ways of engaging, and getting more people involved in the Canadian cultural and political debate. If you think you know everything there is to know about ARPA, or if you want to get involved with shaping culture, with the pro-life cause, or with Canadian politics, join us for one of these workshops in your area. For more information, go to the events page at arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. On the feature today, an interview with Edmonton area MP Garnet Jenness. Last week, he complained to the CBC Ombudsman about an op-ed piece presented by the network's Neil MacDonald. We want to talk to him about that and about a motion that's coming up for debate in the House of Commons later this month. It's kind of related. First of all, Mr. Jenness, welcome to Lighthouse News. It's your first appearance with us since you got elected.
Great to be with you.
So you wrote a letter to the CBC Ombudsman earlier this month complaining about an opinion piece that Neil MacDonald presented. What was the basis of the opinion piece and what was the basis of your complaint?
Sure. Well, the opinion piece basically said that most people involved in mass shootings in Canada were Christians. Most of the shooters were Christians. And that was the claim. And the fact of the matter is the research shows that that's not at all the case. I don't know that very many generalizations can be made about mass shooters in general. There seem to be some underlying sort of challenges in all of their backgrounds, some real diversity in terms of what those actually represent. But the claim was made that most of these people were Christians. The article cited 9 different mass shooters. And in all 9 cases, in fact, there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that these people had any recognizable Christian belief or even identified as Christians. In one case, the person's mother confirmed afterwards that this person was an avowed atheist. There were, of the 9, I think 2 who had some kind of familial connection to Christianity, as in their sort of their parents went to church. But if you look through the evidence, and we presented that evidence in our letter to the Ombudsman, it's just very clear that this isn't correct, that none of these shooters cited had any kind of recognizable Christian belief. So it's obviously a problem when you spread these kinds of stereotypes, period, to try and suggest that this is sort of the responsibility of one particular group. There wasn't even a factual basis to it.
Just to play devil's advocate, though, I mean, isn't Neil MacDonald entitled to his opinion, even if he's wrong? I mean, he gets paid to express that opinion, right?
Sure, he's entitled to his opinion, but the public broadcaster has a certain responsibility when it comes to accuracy and when it comes to not sort of inciting stereotypes about particular groups. I think they would probably understand and accept that with regard to the vast majority of groups. It's just that for some reason it was felt that it was acceptable to make these kinds of generalizations about Christians. And again,
not at all reflective of the facts, but also inappropriate coming from that source. If someone as a private citizen were to make these same comments or on private media, I would still disagree with it, perhaps raise the issue of the problems with that presentation. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but not to your own facts in some sense. But there is a special status that the CBC has, which is part of the question here.
Any response from the Ombudsman yet?
So the immediate response we got back was to acknowledge that they'd gotten the letter and to kind of explain the process to us. And they did that in a very sort of polite and fair way. So we appreciate that. And we look forward to seeing where this goes and making whatever follow-up is required later on.
Okay, this isn't happening in a sociological or political vacuum. I mean, later this month, Parliament will be looking at Motion 103 from Mississauga Erin Mills MP Iqra Khalid. It's a motion that basically condemns Islamophobia. Now, why is it okay to condemn that? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but why is it okay to condemn that, but it's equally okay to identify Canada's mass shooters as white Christian men? That was the tweet from the CBC's The National. What's actually going on here?
Well, with respect to the motion, I think it's an important one to study and kind of get an understanding of what it's actually saying and what the impacts of it will be. And we're looking at that in kind of an ongoing way. It is a motion and not a bill, so it doesn't carry the force of law, but any motion expresses, in a general sense, the perspective of the House. To be fair, I mean, we're talking about two different people. So there may be many people that are concerned about discrimination against Muslims and are concerned about discrimination against Christians. I would actually count myself in that camp. I mean, I think it's a reality that Muslims in certain situations can face bigotry and discrimination. I think the same is true of Christians. The same is true of Jews, of Sikhs, of people from a range of different backgrounds. I guess my message would just be that bigotry and discrimination against anyone, that's not acceptable. At the same time, it's okay to disagree with, to criticize the theological or even the social or political claims of a particular religion. It's okay to say that I don't agree with Christians or I think Christianity is correct or incorrect for X, Y, Z reason. That's all part of debate that's legitimate within a democratic society, and that kind of debate is not bigotry. But we can and we should say in an even-handed way that discrimination and bigotry are not things that we should accept. I do think there is this dynamic where some people perceive, hey, Christians have this historically dominant position in our country and they're a majority, so it's okay to say things about Christians that we wouldn't say about minority groups. That's a perspective that some people have. Again, it's not one that I agree with. I think that if you believe that people should be treated fairly and with respect, then that should go for everyone. And your listeners, I think, would appreciate the fact that practicing Christians are in a minority in Canada as well. So it's not really sensible to say, well, we can criticize them in a different way because they're part of a majority, when ostensibly, if you think about a religious practice, they probably aren't.
Well, Barbara Kay asked the question in the National Post last week, and I'll quote the headline, "How long until honest criticism of Islamism constitutes a speech crime?" I mean, that's the concern. You're right. This is a motion, not a private member's bill, so it carries less weight. But it does call for a whole-of-government approach, and again, I'm quoting from the motion, a whole-of-government approach to reducing or eliminating systemic racism and religious discrimination, including Islamophobia. What exactly does that mean?
Well, again, I mean, if it's about saying that discrimination and racism are not acceptable, that discrimination towards Muslims is unacceptable, I think you'd see wide agreement. I don't know that anybody out there is in favor of discrimination against people on the basis of their background or their religious views, at least not part of our mainstream political discourse in Canada. But I think it is important that we be able to have real and open debates about religion. I'm a Christian. I don't have any problem with someone having the freedom to forcefully disagree with the claims of Christianity, even to argue that the social implications of Christianity have been negative. If that's someone's view, they're welcome to express that. So I think we need to just be clear about what we're talking about, that discrimination is always and everywhere unacceptable. But it's also important to be able to have substantive discussion and debate about religious ideas.
Sir, at the outset, I said this was your first appearance on Lighthouse News. I certainly hope it won't be the last. Thank you for your time.
Great discussion. Thanks for having me on.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca.
Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.